हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 6, The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So verse 2, 685 through 87. Gopinathacharya then addressed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You are a great scholar and a teacher of many disciples. Indeed, there is no other scholar like you on earth. Nonetheless, because you are bereft of even a pinch of the Lord's mercy, you cannot understand him, even though he is present in your home. It is not your fault. It is the verdict of the scriptures. You cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by scholarship. Srila Prabhupada. The fact is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, cannot be attained simply by explanations, logic, and erudite scholarship. One cannot understand him simply by one's brain substance. Even by studying all the Vedic literatures, one cannot understand the Supreme Lord. However, if one is slightly favored by the mercy of the Lord is pleased, one can understand him. But who are the candidates eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord? Only the devotees. They alone can understand what is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord reveals himself to the sincere devotee when he is pleased with his service. Swayam eva spurat yada. One should not try to understand the Lord simply from the statements of the Vedas, nor should one uselessly attempt to decry these statements through reasoning and logic. In Bhagavad Gita 7.25, it is said, Naham prakashas sarvasya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone. Sevan muki, mukhe, hi jihwa dao, swayam eva spurat yada. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.1.34. The Lord reveals himself to a devotee when he is completely satisfied by the devotee's service. End quote. Thus, one cannot understand the Supreme Lord without his mercy. The absolute truth cannot be understood by speculation, and this is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita. So Gopinathacharya is then making this point very clearly to Gopinathacharya that he's a scholar, and you can't deny he's a scholar. Right? Just because someone is, you know, it's all useless and all that, and if they're not surrendered to the Lord, then that's nonsense. But that doesn't mean that you don't respect that their particular scholarship or knowledge or things that they have, you know, from their particular endeavor that they have. And so he's saying there is no one better than him, and that's just the way it is. And he says, but even though you don't have a pinch of the Lord's mercy, then you cannot understand him because, you know, he was worried, you know, he wouldn't be dealt with properly because he's a sannyasi. Then he takes him to the home. He checks all the ecstasies and all that. Then, you know, when he comes back awake, when the devotees come and do kirtan, then he's, you know, very happy about that, takes care of the devotees and all that. And but he's seen all these symptoms, and he's talking about him being a sannyasi. He should be reinitiated into a higher level of sannyasi since he's into a lower level, at least according to their kind of definition, right? Because naturally they kind of have things backwards. And so then he's not appreciating and these things. And so Gopinathacharya is just telling him that, says, you're not understanding this. He's seeing him as a sannyasi, as a grihasthi, he's dealing very nicely with him as a sannyasi. And, you know, he's following all these etiquettes and all that, and he's doing that. And so in one sense, you can say, well, that's service. On one level, you can say yes. But on another, he's only doing that because of varnashram. But at the same time is from this, then we see is by the grace of Krishna, one gets the association of Guru. So now he's hearing from Gopinath Acharya about the position of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then by this, then he will gain the Lord's mercy. So we see is that by the mercy of the Lord. So he says, you don't understand. So how is he going to get that? Because he doesn't have any devotion. Then it's going to be through the mercy of the devotees. So it's very important to understand that. It's not how, it means you can present things very logically and this and that, but it's not because of the logic. It's because of people somehow or another having the association of devotees, appreciating, and then in that way it'll move forward. But it's not that, oh, we have to present it so that intelligent people can understand. You have to engage them in devotion, only then they'll understand. There's no such thing as there's some system to make intelligent people understand by some intelligent method. It's only by hearing and chanting about the Lord, taking prasad, associating with devotees, only by devotional service. So yes, you can create a more intellectual environment, a more refined culture, a more refined environment, all these things so that the people will feel comfortable. But that's where it ends. Unless you're presenting devotional service or engaging them in some way in devotional service, they will not understand. So it's not that, no, we have to appeal to that intellectual side. It's like, yes, you can, but that's not what causes them to take up faith and devotional service. It's because of having rendered service. That's it. Nothing else. So one has to have that faith, as we saw, that Lord Chaitanya previously said, is that faith, that devotional service includes all other things. That's the faith by which you'll advance. If you're attached to the karma, you're attached to jnana, then it will simply slow down your development. So then, he's made this statement, and it's a strong statement, but he's mentioned that it's in the scriptures and everything, because he's saying you're like this. It's not your fault, because the scriptures say that someone in your position can't know him except by devotion, and he's not shown that devotion. So then in that way, it's not his fault. Meaning that, it's not that he's done something wrong here. He's just not done something right in the way of devotion, right? So that now Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya will reply, and then you'll see how he replies. As was mentioned before, we saw that he made the statement and the disciples said, you can't just say that. Where's your Shastric evidence? They don't just argue, you say you can't say that about my guru and that kind of thing. They say, well, what's your evidence? And then he gives evidence. And you don't see them arguing after that. So that's the whole point, is that you have to have this aspect of that you have a culture that it has to be based on Shastra, not just fighting over who's the victim and all that. This is for babies. I mean, literally babies, like that. One baby starts crying, then they all start crying. 2688 to 95. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, "My dear Gopinath Acharya, please speak with great care," right? Because he's saying all these things. So be careful here, because if you want to discuss on this scholarly platform, then you have to be careful here, because he's sensing that there might be some misunderstanding here or something. "What is the proof that you have received the mercy of the Lord?" That's the first thing he says. Because it says, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can only understand him through mercy, not through scholarship. You don't have his mercy, you can't understand. So now Bhattacharya is then saying, so from this, you're saying he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means you understand. What's the proof that you have the mercy? Right? So you can see is that the level of discussion here is so refined, right? It's not just like that. How can you say this about me? I'm the greatest scholar. Do you know who I am? This is useless. Like that. You want to talk like this? You got to get yourself a fancy car with the big wheels like that. Put your hat on backwards, have a whole bunch of ton of money, have all the funny twerking girls, and do your rap thing, like that. Then you talk like that. But otherwise, use your brain. So you're saying, he's made a statement. This is the Lord. I don't understand because I'm a scholar only by the mercy of the Lord. He's understanding this is the Lord. So that must mean he has the mercy. So how is it that you have the mercy? You know, prove that. Otherwise, then you're a scholar, right? Because he's Gopinath Acharya. And Sarvabhauma is Bhattacharya. Bhattacharya just means the top of the Bhattas. You know, like Prabhu, you know, is how you say, like you have Prabhupada, the one who the master sits. So the Bhattacharya is the one who the Acharyas follow. So he's an Acharya, Gopinath Acharya. He's from that line. He's from Vidyanagar. He's very intelligent, very trained, you know, great Brahmins. And so then he's saying, you know, you're in the same boat. So why is it you're saying you have the mercy, right? Gopinath Acharya replied, knowledge of the summum bonum, the absolute truth, is evidence of the mercy of the Supreme Lord, right?
Can anyone
Chaitanya
hear me?
Mahaprabhu, you cannot understand him. Sorry, someone wanted to say something?
Last few minutes, we couldn't hear you.
Last few minutes?
I mean, few seconds. I mean, say 30 seconds like that.
30 seconds. So did you hear Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied?
No. I mean, until, yeah. The discussion was, you said that Bhattacharya among the Bhattas, he is the top. So until then, we have heard.
Oh, I see. Okay. That's strange. What are we on? Okay, we're on the thing here. Yeah, it should be. Okay. So then here, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is then asking him, okay, you're a scholar, I'm a scholar, but you say you have the mercy and I don't. That's why you understand I don't. So he says, what's the proof? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, my dear Gopinath Acharya, please speak with great care. What is the proof that you have received the mercy of the Lord? Gopinath Acharya replied, knowledge of the summum bonum, the absolute truth, is evidence of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And so Gopinath's point is that he has that knowledge of the Supreme Lord. He can tell he's the Supreme Lord. That's, therefore, you can tell that's the mercy. That's the symptom. And then he continues here, Gopinath Acharya, you have seen the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during his absorption in an ecstatic mood. Despite directly perceiving the symptoms of the Supreme Lord in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you cannot understand him. This is commonly called illusion, right? Because remember before he's looking at it and that he has these symptoms of Mahabhav, right? He says, this Adirudha Mahabhav means that's, you know, within Mahabhav, that's a high level. And only someone who is in a spiritual form could understand, you know, could do that. No mortal could do that. And at the same time, he doesn't understand, well, maybe this is God. Because otherwise, Gopinath Acharya said, here's the Supreme Lord. And then he would have gone, oh, that explains why this is there. No, he just goes on, oh, he's just a sannyasi. I should teach him Vedanta. So this is what he said. This is commonly called illusion. A person influenced by the external energy is called Bahirmukjana, a mundane person, because despite his perception, he cannot understand the real substance. Hearing Gopinath Acharya say this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya smiled and began to speak as follows. The Bhattacharya said, we are just having a discussion among friends and considering the points described in scriptures. Do not become angry, right? Because there's a good point that by the sounds of it, Gopinath is becoming quite a bit, you know, strong in his presentation here. I am simply speaking on the strength of the Shastras. He says, I'm speaking on Shastra. Gopinath is saying, I'm speaking on Shastra. You know, so, okay, please don't take any offense. right? So he's going to say, you know, you don't get angry, man. He's saying this, he's already, you know, strong, but I think he wants to preempt that he doesn't get angry at what he's going to say now. And he says, I'm only speaking on Shastra. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certainly a great uncommon devotee, but we cannot accept him as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu because, according to Shastra, there is no incarnation in this age of Kali, right? Because it's said that there is no incarnation as such, meaning, generally speaking, the Lord doesn't come himself. There's a Shakti Vaishavatar. And so that way, then, he's known as Tri Yuga, right? And is it recording? Doing all kinds of funny things at the top of the page. It's recording? Yeah?
Yes, Maharaj.
Oh, okay. And so, so he's known as Tri Yuga. So he's using that shloka like that, which is the point that's being made. Another name for Lord Vishnu is Tri Yuga because there's no incarnation of Lord Vishnu in Kali Yuga. Indeed, this is the verdict of the revealed scriptures. So he's saying, okay, you're saying he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means he has to be an incarnation. But he's Tri Yuga. He only appears in the other Yugas. So how can you say this is the Supreme Lord? So he knows enough Shastra that he can sit and discuss these things, right? And so we see his scholarship is very high, but it doesn't mean that it's not mundane, right? Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is known as Tri Yuga, which means that he is manifest in three Yugas. However, this means that in the age of Kali, the Lord appears not directly, but in disguise, right? So that's how then it's being explained. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.38. Itam nri tiryag rishi deva jashas vatar rare lokan vibhavas yasi hamsi jagat pratipan dharmam maha purusha pashi yuganu vritam Channa kalau yad abhavas tri yugo ta satvam. My Lord, you kill all the enemies of the world. In your multifarious incarnations in the families of men, animals, demigods, rishis, aquatics, and so on. Thus, you illuminate the worlds with transcendental knowledge. In this age of Kali, O Mahapurusha, you sometimes appear in a covered incarnation. Therefore, you are known as Tri Yuga, one who appears only in three yugas. So then we see that it's explained. And so now it's just a matter of being able to appreciate now what's going to unfold here. Because it's a Shakti Vesh, therefore he's covered like that. But at the same time as he can appear, but then still he'll have that covered element. So the Kali Yuga generally means that it has that covered aspect. Srila Sridhar Swami has also verified that Lord Vishnu appears in the age of Kali, but does not act as he does in other ages. Lord Vishnu incarnates for two purposes, Paritra Naya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chadushkritam, Bhagavad Gita 4.8. That is, he comes to engage in pastimes with his devotees and to annihilate the demons. These purposes are visible in the Satya, Treta, and Dwarpar Yugas. But in the Kali Yuga, the Lord appears disguised. He does not directly kill demons and give protection to the faithful, because the Lord is not directly perceived in Kali Yuga, but is directly known in the other three Yugas. Because of that, his name is Tri Yuga. So in the other ages, you see, here he is the Lord, here are the devotees he interacts, here he is the Lord, here are the demons, he kills the demons. So then it becomes, you know, very straightforward like that. But we find that in this age, then he can't kill the demons because, as Nityananda Prabhu pointed out, then there'd be no one left, right? And he doesn't deal with the devotees as the Supreme Lord because he's in a hidden position. So he himself is also acting as a devotee. 2696103. Upon hearing this, Gopinath Acharya became very unhappy. He said, because then he's just, in other words, he's unhappy because now he's just trying to say, you know, he can't be there. In other words, there can't be an incarnation, so there can't be, you know. He said to the Bhattacharya, you consider yourself the knower of all Vedic scriptures. Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata are the two most important Vedic scriptures, but you have paid no attention to their statements. In Srimad Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata, it is stated that the Lord appears directly. But you say that in this age there is no manifestation or incarnation of Lord Vishnu. In this age of Kali, there is no Leela avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he's known as Triyuga, right? So the Leela avatars are appearing in the other ages. In this one, then he's not a Leela avatar. And so because of that, then, one is saying there's no avatar. So you're saying he's Triyuga and that he comes and performs these pastimes and kills the demons like as Krishna, as Rama, as Hamsa, like this. That is one of his holy names, right? Therefore he's known as Triyuga. That is one of his holy names. Gopinath Acharya continued, there is certainly an incarnation in every age, and as such, and such an incarnation is called the Yuga Avatar. But your heart has become so hardened by logic and argument that you cannot consider all these facts, right? It doesn't mean he hasn't heard these, but he'll bring forward which ones support his philosophy and all that. So that's natural. Wherever your values are, that's where you're going to compare everything to. Because you yourself have to progress from one step to the next from the step that you're on. You can't go to another step that you're not connected to. So from one step, you step to the next, from that to the next. So the step that they're on is just this logic and argument and this impersonalism. So they can't just, even though they have all the Sanskrit shlokas, and that, and they've read them, it doesn't, they can't apply them. And so they have to take things that are close to them. So here, because the Lord, the ultimate point of their impersonal aspect. And so then for him not being the Supreme Lord, not having a incarnation is fine with him. And so he's going to take that approach because he can't, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his mind can't be a person. It has to be Brahman. That's the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right? And he's pointing out is if you have Yuga Avatar, then there has to be one in every age. But since there's no Leela Avatar, that's why it's called Triyuga. In the past, your son has had bodies of three different colors according to the age. These colors were white, red, and yellow. In this age, Dwapara, he has accepted a blackish body. Footnote 32. This verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.13, was spoken by Gargamuni when he's performing the rituals at Lord Krishna's name-giving ceremony. So right there he said, they are appearing in Kali Yuga, right? Because he said in the other three yugas, right? And so this one, he's accepted a blackish body, but there was white, red, and yellow. So the white and red, we understand. The yellow, that means that has to be the fourth one. In this age of Kali, those who are intelligent perform the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in this age, always describing the glories of Krishna. That incarnation is yellowish in hue and is always associated with his plenary expansions, such as Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and his personal expansions, such as Garadhar, as well as his devotees and associates, such as Surup Damodar. But so he's always going to come with his plenary expansions, personal expansions, and the devotees and associates. Srila Prabhupada. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 was explained by Srila Jiva Goswami in his Krama Sandarbha, as quoted by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in regard to the explanation of Adi Lila, 3rd chapter, verse 52, given below. Okay, so this is already 2, what did it say? This is Adi 3:52. And so this is Madhya 6, okay. So, Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this verse in his commentary on the Bhagavatam, right? So this is translated from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's quoting, known as the Krama Sandarbha, right? So you could say, why not just directly quote from Jiva Goswami? But the point is then when the Acharya is quoting, then you're going to get that understanding. He's going to make it clear to you how it's relevant and all that. So therefore, just like the mango, when it's touched by the lips of the parrot, becomes more sweet. And so that is the perspective. We don't need to bring out the perspective, well, parrots only bite those mangoes that are already sweet. So it just indicates that it is sweet. It didn't make it sweet. this kind of useless nonsense we don't require. You know, so the whole point comes down is that no. So therefore, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so Prabhupada is quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's quoting Jiva Goswami, right? So this then gives the very nice. Well, you know, this is how the you know, we get a clear understanding. Otherwise, yes, go to Jiva Goswami, see what you'll understand. Okay. No, okay. So in his verse on the, Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this verse in his commentary in the Bhagavatam, known as the Krama Sandarbha, when he says that Lord Krishna also appears with a golden complexion. That golden Lord Krishna is Lord Chaitanya, who is worshipped by intelligent men in this age. That is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam by Garuda Muni, who said that although the child of Krishna was blackish, he also appears in three other colors, red, white, and yellow. He exhibited his white and red complexions in the Satya and Treta Yugas respectfully. He did not exhibit the remaining color, yellow gold, until he appeared as Lord Chaitanya, who is known as Gaurahari. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Krishna Varna means Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Krishna Varna and Krishna Chaitanya are equivalent. The name Krishna appears with both Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Krishna. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is always engaged in describing Krishna and thus enjoys transcendental bliss by chanting and remembering his name and form. Lord Krishna himself appears as Lord Chaitanya to preach the highest gospel. So in this way, Krishna Varnam, meaning the Varnam means letters. So with the letters Krishna, that Krishna appears always glorifying Krishna. So you don't have to take it meaning the color. Right? So he's not Krishna Varnam, meaning he's black like Krishna. He's Krishna Varnam, he's always chanting Krishna's name. Right? So this way appears to preach the highest gospel. Lord Chaitanya always chants the holy name of Krishna and describes it also. Because he is Krishna himself, whoever meets him will automatically chant the holy name of Krishna and later describe it to others. He injects one with transcendental Krishna consciousness, which merges the chanter in transcendental bliss. In all respects, therefore, he appears before everyone as Krishna, either by personality or by sound. Simply by seeing Lord Chaitanya, one at once remembers Lord Krishna. One may therefore accept him as Vishnu Tattva. In other words, Lord Chaitanya is Lord Krishna himself. Sangopangasta Parshadam further indicates that Lord Chaitanya is Lord Krishna. His body is always decorated with ornaments of sandalwood and with sandalwood paste. By his super excellent beauty, he subdues all the people of the age. In other descents, the Lord sometimes used weapons to defeat the demoniac. But in this age, the Lord subdues him with his all-attractive figure as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? So the point of defeating them is to subdue them. And because they're so attached in all this, they won't change. So then by killing them, they get purified and liberated. But here he comes in by his attractiveness. And by engaging them in chanting, then the demoniac mentality becomes attracted to Lord Chaitanya. Becomes purified by the chanting and attracted to Lord Krishna. So in this way, you've killed the demoniac mentality, because that's the important thing. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that his beauty is his astra, or weapon, to subdue the demons. Because he is all attractive, it is to be understood that all the demigods lived with him as his companions. His acts were uncommon and his associates wonderful. When he propagated the Sankirtan movement, he attracted many great scholars and acharyas, especially in Bengal and Orissa. Lord Chaitanya is always accompanied by his best associates like Lord Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, and Srivas. Srila Jiva Goswami cites a verse from the Vedic literature which says that there is no necessity of performing sacrificial demonstrations or ceremonial functions. He comments that instead of engaging in such external pompous exhibitions, all people, regardless of caste, color, or creed, can assemble together and chant Hare Krishna to worship Lord Chaitanya. Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishnam, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32, indicates that the prominence should be given to the name of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya taught Krishna consciousness and chanted the name of Krishna. Therefore, to worship Lord Chaitanya, everyone should together chant the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To propagate worship in churches, temples, and mosques, it is not possible, because people have lost interest in that. But anywhere and everywhere, the people can chant Hare Krishna. Thus, worshiping Lord Chaitanya, they can perform the highest activity and fulfill the highest religious purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord. So he's saying here, the emphasis is on the chanting, on the holy name. So we see as Prabhupada himself, when he went to New York, he went into the park, sat down there, started chanting for many hours every day. And gradually, then people started to take interest. And then by hearing the chanting, they took part. Then they started to get that faith and everything. And then we see that they became devotees. And so that's the method. You go someplace, you start the chanting. You know, when devotees came to London, they started chanting. They didn't have a place like that. So we see all the early places, they started from the chanting. Then they developed the temple, right? Chaupati, they started in somebody's apartment, started the chanting. Then eventually, much later, they got a temple. So that's the important thing. No, not that, oh yes, no, we should make a nice temple, that will attract the people. No, the holy name will attract the people. That's the whole focus. That's the important thing. Then with that, as people come, then having a temple has some meaning. Because then the devotees can get together and do things, and then the deities come, and everything, you know, can follow. But it starts from the holy name. And then all these other things are there, and then they support in that process. 104 to 109. Gopinath Acharya quoted, okay, the Lord in the incarnation of Gaurasundar has a golden complexion. Indeed, his entire body, which is very nicely constituted, is like molten gold. Sandalwood pulp is smeared all over his body. He will take the fourth order of spiritual life, sannyas, and will be very much self-controlled. He will be distinguished from Mayavadi sannyasis in that he will be fixed in devotional service and will spread the Sankirtan movement. Footnote 34. Gopinath Acharya quoted this verse from the Mahabharata's Vishnu Sahasranama Stotra. Gopinath Acharya, so this is right there. That's what he said. You've read these, but you're not catching it, what's here. So then here it is that you have the this verse from Mahabharata that, you know, says even the whole aspect of the pastime and how it'll be situated. So right it is, here it is. He'll come, he'll be very attractive. You know, like that, he'll take sannyas, he'll be distinguished from Mayavadis, that he'll be engaged in devotional service. So Bhattacharya has seen all this, right? And so that's Gopinath Acharya's point, is that you've seen this and you can't understand it. So that means you don't have the mercy of the Lord. Gopinath Acharya then said, there's no need to quote so much evidence from the Shastras, for you are a very dry speculator, right? In other words, I can quote all I like, but what does it matter to you? You're a dry speculator. There's no need to sow seeds on barren land. When the Lord will be pleased with you, you will also understand these conclusions and will quote from the Shastras. Right? So you say, why should I quote? Because it'll be just like taking seeds and throwing it on barren land. Nothing will grow. But if you please the Lord by some service and by some devotion, then you also will understand, and you'll be quoting all the verses, right? Because he's read all the Shastras. That means he knows all the verses. He's just not connecting it together with the Lord. And so then he'll be the one quoting all the verses, right? The false arguments and philosophical word jugglery of your disciples are not faults of theirs. They have simply received the benediction of Mayavadi philosophy. You know, it's like saying, they're hopping around the room because they have simply received the benefit of, you know, dropping a brick on their toe. You know, yes. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of unlimited qualities and whose different potencies bring about agreement and disagreement between disputants. Thus, the illusory energy again and again covers the self-realization of both disputants. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.31. So these two persons disputing, then they argue over these things based on the logic, And so both of nobody understands, because it's only by devotion can the Lord be understood. In almost all cases, yes.
Like in Bhagavad Sandarbha, in the beginning, it was mentioned that Lord is the controller. I mean, he is the owner of the mutually contradictory shaktis. So these contradictions are always there, because he is the Lord of mutually contradictory shaktis, which exists.
Okay, so the only way they can be reconciled is in connection with him.
Yeah.
So then factually, someone who's anuchana, it can only be, it's only through devotion that you can make things anuchana.
Yes.
You know, you can find seeming contradictions, how they're saying that, you know, they reconcile those things. You know, because Narad Muni is famous as that, and he's a great devotee. You know, he's a Mahajan. In almost all cases, whatever learned Brahmins speak becomes accepted. Nothing is impossible for one who takes shelter of my illusory energy and speaks under her influence. Right? So Brahmins speak, it becomes accepted. So even if it's nonsense, but people expect it. Well, what do you expect? Under the control of the illusory energy, these things are going on. So it's his energies themselves that is making this happen. Srila Prabhupada. In this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-4, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains that his illusory energy can perform the impossible, such as the power of the illusory energy. Excuse me. In many cases, philosophical speculators have covered the real truth and have boldly set forth false theories. Right, so I mentioned here boldly, because of their false ego, they're really convinced that what they're talking about is correct and right, because they have so much, they identify with the intelligence. And then they think that because my intelligence is saying this, therefore then it must be true. So they're unable to appreciate that, you know, they may be wrong, because you can't understand this level of understanding from just speculation alone. But because that's their identity, and they have that great pride in themselves, then they have to be right. They can't accept they're wrong. So in this way, the illusory, you know, energy covers them. And when they speak, others also then who want to be covered, they also then hear and then follow them. In ancient times, philosophers like the atheist Kapila, Gautama, Jaimini, Kannada, and similar Brahmanas propounded useless philosophical theories. And in modern days, so-called scientists are setting forth many false theories about the creation, backed up by seemingly logical arguments. You know, like one in a trillion that, you know, one cell could transform into something else. So then what's the possibility of that transformation actually turning into a small living entity? Right? You know, it means that's trillions upon trillions. And then that there's a whole planet full of them. And not only that, the varieties are so developed and so sophisticated. It's like you cannot calculate. There's no possibility it ever happened. You know, scientists, if something's not, you know, 1 in 100, 1 in 10, then they don't even bother with it. But here they're propounding a philosophy that's, you know, like you take trillions, you know, to the 10th power or something, you know, and then you're talking about what they're talking about. But they're so confident. It's just like, what illusion, how Maya has tricked them. They say, oh, we only accept logic and stuff and science that we can see. They can't see any of their theories when it comes to these things. They absolutely can't, nothing, you know. But at the same time, is they are, can you hear us?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. And so they are just very, very proud of this. That's what he said. They seemingly logical arguments, but they don't have any. You know? This is all due to the influence of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. The illusory energy, therefore, sometimes appears correct because it is emanating from the Supreme Correct. To avoid the very bewildering illusory influence, one must accept the Lords of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they are. Only then can one escape the influence of the illusory energy. Otherwise, if you don't accept them as they are, you want to change them and all those kind of things, then you're going to have a problem, because then you're going to be under the illusory energy. Because the point is, as Krishna says it, that's the way it is. You know, but some people saying, oh, but this is in Prabhupada's books, and that's in Prabhupada's books, and how can I read the books, and all these different things, because all these things are said. That person is under the illusory energy. That's the statement being said here by Srila Prabhupada. To avoid the very bewildering illusory influence, one must accept the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they are. And that's it. But at the same time, Prabhupada has a remedy for that. If there's some aspect of the philosophy or a pastime that you can't digest, don't read it. Go read some other part. So read a part that you appreciate. Because being absorbed in Krishna, that's the trick. That's the point that's going to be that you'll get the Lord's mercy. And then by absorbing yourself in something positive, then of course you get purified. And in getting purified, then these other things that seem to be a anomaly or a problem for you, they'll go away. But if we just keep focusing on, no, I can't move forward until this one thing is that, then it's just based on your own attachment and your own value system that you have made up, or you have gotten from others who make it up. You know? And so, you know, that's the whole difficulty, is that one has to be very, very careful of these things, because these are the practical things that we have to be careful in our lives. But otherwise, you know, by the modern things, and you know, this one says this, that one says that, and then we buy into it, it's just then that this, and then they'll say, oh, you're falling, oh, that's just blind. This means, what do you mean? We're not blind like that. We know why we're doing it. And at the same time, they'll say, yeah, the sheep aren't blind either. They just follow each other. They don't know where they're going, you know, because what they're doing is useless. They can see the wool in front of them that they're following, right? When that bunch of wool goes left, they go left, you know? So the whole point is that one has to be very, very careful of these things, because that's why these conversations and these pastimes are so important, because then within that, we can see is where our own weaknesses are. It says, only then can one escape the influence of the illusory energy. So one has to stick to what Krishna said. 2.6, 1.10 through 1.17. After hearing this from Gopinath Acharya, Sarma Boma Bhattacharya said, first, go to the place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is staying and invite him here with his associates. Ask him on my account, right? Means Sarvabhoma is asking. Take Jagannath Prasad and first give it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. After that, come back here and teach me well. Yeah, so he's saying, you know, you go there, then you feed all them, but invite them to come meet the Lord. And then after that, come back here, teach me well. Gopinath Acharya was the brother-in-law of Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya. Therefore, their relationship is very sweet and intimate. That's why you see, my dear Bhattacharya, and that, but, you know, oh, don't become angry. You know, that's how they're speaking. Because there's great affection, but at the same time, it's not that the conversation is not serious, and not that they're being very quite direct about what they're saying. So that's the interesting thing, is that in the Vedic culture, you can be direct and still it be done in affection. Well, in the modern, if you're direct, then you lose the affection. If you're affectionate, then, you know, it doesn't, that's the difficulty. They can't balance these things.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Also the aspect that they are brother-in-laws, there you can be like that. Like, but if somebody is at a senior level and all, then you don't do like, Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't want it, so this is like, no, be in the disagreement, openly debate with, you can be Hari Gosvami, Swami or somebody like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, then you'd have to very carefully, or, you know, like that. Yes, that's a very good point. But yes, with senior. But the thing here is that you can have that kind of understanding like that. Under the circumstances, Gopinath Acharya taught him by sometimes blaspheming him, sometimes praising him, and sometimes laughing at him. Right? So he gave all these things and then would say this and that, and then he'd start to see it from all these different angles, because he's only going to see it from his angle that he's the greatest scholar in India, and so, and that's that, you know. But then he points out is that, you know, he completely doesn't understand, or great things on this, and you know, this is very wonderful and that, or other times just laughing at how foolish he is. Okay. This had been going on for some time. Srimakundadatta felt very satisfied to hear the conclusive statements of Gopinathacharya, but he became very unhappy and angry to hear the statements put forward by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because another way, then this is just like Prabhu was saying, just between brothers-in-laws, it's just some fun to sit down and have a topic in which you can argue over. You know, so, you know, what Gopinathacharya is saying is very nice, but Sarvabhauma, he's just saying stuff, well, but what about this? I can remember this many times, sitting on a train, you know, going from one side of the country to the other. So you have, you know, 24, 36 hours of nothing to do, right? And, you know, the most exciting thing that's happening is the train stops and you can get off and go get a samosa or something. You know, that's like, whoopee, you know. So then, and you're sitting, you know, very close to each other, you know, and you're sitting with the same people for that time. And so many times you'd see is that, you know, being on the train and, you know, brahmacharis, I can see were devotees or sadhus or stuff like this, then the Indian gentleman loved to strike up a conversation. And even if they believe in devotional service and all that, they'll, for fun, take the opposing side and just argue, you know, but they'll do it very pleasantly. Ah, yes, a good point, but what about this? You know, because ha, 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 yeah, he's like defeated you here. It's just, you can't figure out what's going on, you know, but that's the thing, is they have fun. They love to do this stuff. You know, it passes the time, right? Then you just need some snacks and everything's perfect, right? According to the instructions of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Gopinathacharya went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and invited him on the Bhattacharya's behalf. The Bhattacharya statements were discussed before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gopinathacharya and Mukundadatta disapproved of the Bhattacharya statements because they caused mental pain. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Do not speak like that. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has shown great affection and mercy towards me," right? Because he showed, you know, he picked him up from the temple, he's dealing with him very nicely, he's caring that such a highly qualified person is, you know, in a lower sannyas position and all these things. So in that way, then the Lord's having fun, you know, with this and that, you know, he's showing all these nice moods. Out of paternal affection for me, he wants to protect me and see I follow the regulative principles of a sannyasi. What is the fault? What fault is there in this? From that angle, yes, it's perfectly right. And this is why then we see Lord Chaitanya is coming and staying at his place. You know, he's giving this opportunity for Bhattacharya to make all these arrangements to serve Lord Chaitanya and the devotees. And Lord Chaitanya has made the arrangements that Gopinathacharya, then we're going to hear all these things. But coming in this way, it's just not working. And so therefore, then Lord Chaitanya himself will deliver the mercy.
Maharaj,
verses 118. Yes.
Also the aspect in that intimacy and affection. Like anybody from a particular village, if they belong to the same village, they are like as affectionate, as close as like own relatives, your own brothers, like cousin brothers, like that. If you are from the same village, it's like the level of affection from is like, you know, equivalent to your own brothers and like, you know, like for him,
yes,
it's like a fatherly figure completely.
Yes, and also
like uncle, like
Bhattacharya also sees the other ways because
yes.
He went to school with who is it with his Lord Chaitanya's father?
Lord Chaitanya's father? No, Bhattacharya's father went with Nilambar Chakravarti.
Oh, okay. So that means so that the grandfathers were.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So just like that, they're from Vidyanagar, and also Gopinathacharya is from there. And then they went to school over there. So that means also then they have that relationship. Remember in the school back in the 80s, that you know, all the time is that, you know, the boys say, oh, this is my brother and this and that. And so I think, oh, it's like this. Then they find out later is they're from the same village, but they would say they're brothers like that. Or they were cousins and they were brothers or like that. So yeah, that's true, very true.
Also, Maharaj, in my father's village, like all of us share the same surname. It's technically like 7 generations ago, we were all like, you know, brothers. So that
kind of okay, system. Okay. Yeah, that's also no. Yeah, true.
Maharaj?
Yes.
You mentioned that despite the scholarship of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that it comes to nothing unless you have the right attitude or the right mood.
Yes.
Up until then, I wonder at what point does Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya qualifies to receive the mercy? And I'm just thinking, is it possible because he already started his devotional service by intervening in the Jagannath temple, bring Lord Chaitanya to his place, that he already qualified?
It means, in one sense, we can look at it like that, but at the same time as then bhakti being independent, it's causeless. Means that we're in the rotting in the material world, and so therefore it's not that we deserve, you know, something. We did this, therefore this came like that.
Right.
But it's by the Lord's mercy. So something has been done in which he has, because we could say, he did this, but who knows what the mentality was when he did that.
Right.
And so then, you know, that association with Gopinath Acharya, with Mukunda Datta, with this, rendering service to the Vaishnavas and all these things, that would be more of the aspect, I would think.
Yes. Yes.
But in any case, we see that this whole chapter is dedicated to the liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So we can see is that the time has come. Because as we said before, that he was supposed to be Lord Chaitanya's teacher, you know, when he went to Gurukul. But that didn't happen because he got deviated by Mayavad philosophy and ended up in Puri. So that Lord Chaitanya has gone to Puri. So one of the first things to do is to save Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Because if you save him, then you're going to catch everybody else in Puri. Just like when you go to Varanasi, then if you catch the big sannyasi there?
Prakashananda Saraswati.
Yeah, you catch him right there. That's 10,000 sannyasis, disciples just follow. And then, you know, everyone else. So, you know, it's just... It's also that aspect, you know, the preaching. But for Lord Chaitanya, then, you know, he is, you know, the devotee. And so then, but yes, you can say is that there's something in that you are rendering service to the Lord and the devotees that's going to be. But it's not because of the mechanical point that's there. It's because of that concern. So Lord Chaitanya is saying, oh no, but don't speak like that. He, you know, showed great affection, that he has that kind of fatherly affection and all those kind of things, and he wants the best for me, and so like that, you know, which he does. But the thing is he's seeing it from a material point of view, you know, how he wants the best for him. And so Gopinath Acharya is pointing out, no, this is the Supreme Lord, so then you can't look at it like that. But Lord Chaitanya is just taking, I'm just a devotee, I'm not the Supreme Lord. And so in that way, then it's favorable. And so Lord Chaitanya is pleased. Is that okay?
Thank you. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yes. Okay. So verses 118 through 125. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explains the Vedanta Sutra. 2.6, 118 through 120. The next morning, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya together visited the temple of Lord Jagannath. Both of them were in a very pleasant mood. When they entered the temple, because whether he believes it's the Supreme Lord or not, I mean, just the physical auspicious qualities of this person, he's a sannyasi like that. He has all these ecstatic symptoms that you'll only find in some very great devotee. So from any case, whatever he is, He's somebody special. So in that way, he's very happy to be with him. And he's dealing very nicely with Lord Chaitanya. And so then he is there. Plus, you know, they're you know, basically you can say, you know, related on the village terms like that, you know, as Prabhu was pointing out before, is because, you know, Bhattacharya's father and Lord Chaitanya's grandfather, they were classmates, you know. So, you know, all these things, you know, just, it's just, yeah. When they entered the temple, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya offered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a seat, while he himself sat down on the floor out of due respect for a sannyasi. He then began to instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on Vedanta philosophy. And out of affection and devotion, he spoke to the Lord as follows. Right? Because he's thinking that, okay, he's so young, he's so attractive, how will he maintain sannyas? So by being always absorbed in Vedanta Sutra and analyzing the points that are being made there, and this way he'll be able to be detached from the world and maintain. So he's trying to, you know, improve his situation and that. And so that's the point that Lord Chaitanya is looking at. That's I think Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is known as Saragrahi Janardana. He takes that essence, he takes the intention that's meant. Srila Prabhupada. The Vedanta or Brahma Sutra, written by Srila Vyasadeva, is a book studied by all advanced spiritual students, especially by the sannyasis of all religious communities, sampradayas. It means I've seen it myself when we went to Udupi once and we went up to see the sannyasis. And so there's the temple place, and then if you keep going through to the back, then there's the goshala and that. And then if you go in farther, then it goes into the ashram. And you go up into the ashram, and there everybody's sitting around, you know, on the floor and all that. And you know, 'cause it's summertime, and so they're just sitting around. And the Swami was reading from Vedanta Sutra and the commentaries, and then they're all sitting there listening. Like that. And then, yeah. And so that's what they do when there's nothing to do. They sit around and read Vedanta Sutra, you know, like that. Of course, that was before Facebook, but there's a good chance that still something goes on, right? The sannyasis must read the Vedanta Sutra to establish the final conclusions concerning Vedic knowledge. Here, of course, the Vedanta mentioned is the commentary of Shankaracharya, known as Sharirika Bhashya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya intended to convert Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was a Vaishnava sannyasi, into a Mayavadi sannyasi. He therefore made this arrangement to instruct him in the Vedanta Sutra, according to the Sharirika commentary of Shankaracharya. All the sannyasis of the Shankara Sampradaya enjoy seriously studying the Vedanta Sutra with the Sharirika Bhashya commentary. It is said, Vedanta Vakyeshu Sada Ramanta. One should always enjoy the studies of the Vedanta Sutra.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Maharaj, I heard that like even in among the Shris in Sri Rangam, like no, Ramanujacharya instructed the devotees that you have to always, every day read the Sri Bhashya. So there will be some person at least reading on one corner, Sribhashya, and like, unfortunately, it is not like, no, our Bhagavatam class where it's a serious thing. He's reading and then there's nobody else around.
It happens. Yeah, so that's the difficulty. 2.6.121 through 125. The Bhattacharya said, hearing Vedanta philosophy is the sannyasi's main business. Therefore, without hesitation, you should study Vedanta philosophy, hearing it without cessation from a superior person. Right? So the you know, so he's saying it's the duty of a sannyasi, because we see is that in one sense, if you're looking at it mechanically, and when we're studying the Veda, because you have the four Vedas, but each Veda is divided into four sections. So you have the verses, the Brahman, the verses, the Samhita, which is when we say Rig Samhita or Yajur Samhita, then that means all the verses that are there. Then you have the Brahmanas, you know, so that's memorized by the Brahmacharis. Then the next section is called the Brahmanas. And that is showing how those same verses are used for rituals and all that. And so then by studying the Brahmanas, then you get from there the Griya Sutras and the Dharma Sutras. Then they can engage in all the duties of a householder and all that. So then that's the next stage. Then you have the third section is called the Aranyakas. So it's for those who live in the forest, the Vanaprastas. So that explains all the metaphysical considerations that are going on within those same verses in that Samhita, right? In other words, they memorize it as the Brahmachari, then they apply it as a Grihastha into the rituals and that. Then as a Vanaprastha, they analyze it according to metaphysics. Then the fourth section is called the Upanishads. And so then the sannyasis, then they focus on that to try to understand the absolute truth and the ultimate goal and all that. So it's a natural progression. So that's why then saying here, it's the sannyasi's main business, because it will be, that'll be the aspect, because the Upanishads are what should be studied. And then the Vedanta Sutras is the giving the essence of the Upanishads. Right? So then that's there. We follow the same line, but the point is then the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutras, Srimad Bhagavatam. So for us, the study of Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the duty of someone who is serious about advancing in spiritual life. Because understanding that, no one actually comes to the principle, the mentality of sannyas, in which whatever I'm doing is for Krishna, rather than, you know, the aspect of it's my work, my results, and then I give that to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya replied, "You are very merciful to me, and therefore I think it is my duty to obey your order." Right? Because he's performing these pastimes. Thus, for 7 days continually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listened to the Vedanta philosophy expounded by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. However, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not say anything and did not indicate whether it was right or wrong. So he's not, you know, yes, yes, and what, you know, all these kind of things. He's not doing. He's just sitting there very nicely, just looking and listening. And that's it. That's all he's doing. He simply sat there and listened to the Bhattacharya. On the 8th day, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "You have been listening to Vedanta philosophy from me continually for 7 days. You have simply been listening, fixed in your silence. Since you do not say whether you think it is right or wrong, I cannot know that whether you are actually understanding the Vedanta philosophy or not." Because if you understand, you know, you're nodding your head or something, or you ask a question, you know, so is this what you mean? And then it's confirmed, or, you know, I have this doubt, or is this mean? No, it means that. And, you know, like that, then you can understand if he's actually understanding. It's that interaction. Verses 26 to 183. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's critique of Shankaracharya's Sharira Kapasya. So we see we had here 7 shlokas on Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explains the Vedanta Sutra for 7 days. There's 7 shlokas. And so now we're going to get, you know, over 50 shlokas on Lord Chaitanya's comment. So we can see is what is of value. So you don't have to even say what he said, because the philosophy of what Mayavadis say, we know that is, it's like, who cares? So here it's going to be, you know, nicely then explained and what's the proper. 126 to 127. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "I am a fool, and consequently I do not study the Vedanta Sutra. I am just trying to hear it from you because you have ordered me." Right? You can still hear? Yes? Okay.
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. "I am just trying to hear it from you because you have ordered me." Right? I do not study. I'm a fool, so I don't study that. But because you said that I'm trying to study, it's like you see that sincerity of that Brahmin and that Lord Chaitanya met in South. His guru told him to read Bhagavad Gita. And so he sits down with the Bhagavad Gita, but he's sitting with the Bhagavad Gita upside down because he can't read. But he's trying to follow the order of his guru. And Lord Chaitanya was very impressed with that. Because of that, then he saw that he had, you know, transcendental, you know, ecstatic symptoms were there. "Only for the sake of executing the duties of the renounced order of sannyas do I listen. Unfortunately, I cannot in the least understand the meaning you are presenting." So it's not that, okay, this is right, that's right. He just said, "I don't understand anything you say," because it's all speculation. It's not based on actually the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of a sannyasi's reading the Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra, but he did not approve the Sharirika commentary of Shankaracharya. Indeed, he said elsewhere, Mayavadi Bhasya Shunile Hoy Sarvanash. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 6.169. One hears the Sharirika Bhasya of Shankaracharya, he is doomed. Thus, a sannyasi, a transcendentalist, must read the Vedanta Sutra regularly. But he should not read the Sharirika Bhasya. This is the conclusion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The real commentary on the Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. Arto yam Brahma Sutranam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the original commentary on Vedanta Sutra, written by the author himself, Srila Vyasadeva. Therefore, the sannyasi can be constantly reading Vedanta Sutra by reading the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And so that's there. But it's just interesting because it said the page before, what was it about? Vedanta Vakyeshu Sada Ramanta. One should always enjoy the studies of the Vedanta Sutra. And so then it's interesting because I remember before it was like if Sahotramars wanted to do something, you know, some familiar reading, you know, something, you know, instead of something new or some other study, just something familiar that he could read and be comfortable with and, you know, enjoy himself in reading. So he would either read Vedanta Sutra or he would read 11th Canto Bhagavatam. So for him, that was like what it says, enjoyable reading like that. So it can be done. 2:6, 128 to 130. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, I accept that you do not understand like that. You don't understand that, I understand, you know, because it's very elevated, right? Yet even one who does not understand inquires about the subject matter, right? So, okay, you don't understand that, I said, but shouldn't you be inquiring? Because I'm speaking, you would want to know, right? You are hearing again and again, yet you keep silent. I cannot understand what is actually within your mind. So what are you thinking? You know, are you thinking about lunch? You know, what are you thinking about? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then revealed his mind, saying, I can understand the meaning of each sutra very clearly, right? Because there's over 500 sutras. I understand the sutras, but your explanations have simply agitated my mind. Srila Prabhupada, the factual meaning of the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra is as clear as sunshine. The Mayavadi philosophers simply try to cover the sunshine with the clouds of interpretations imagined by Shankaracharya and his followers. 2:6, 131. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, the meaning of the aphorisms in the Vedanta Sutra contain clear purports in themselves, right? Because that's how it was written, was some point is being made and then all the different things are there because it's written in the form of the Adhikaranas. That's so there's going to be a main point being made. Then there's going to be the explanation of that and the reasons. There's going to be the examples, clearing any doubts connected with that, and then bringing it to a conclusion. So that's what he's saying. They're very clear purports in themselves, like that. Of course, for someone very qualified and intelligent, you know. But the point is that he says, but other purports you presented simply covering the meaning of the sutras like a cloud. Like that. In themselves, they're clear, but you've covered them because it's very obvious that it's talking about the supremacy of the Lord and how everything's connected to the Lord and how he is the source of everything and his transcendental position. But then they're covering all this, you know. So, you know, therefore I don't understand. Srila Prabhupada, please refer to Adi Lila, 7th chapter, verses 106 to 146 for an explanation of this verse. See translations below. Ooh. All right. The Lord said, Vedanta philosophy consists of words spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, in the form of Vyasadeva. The material defects of mistakes, Brahma, illusions, Pramada, cheating, Vipralipsa, and sensory inefficiency, Karana, Apattava, do not exist in the words of the personality of Godhead. The absolute truth is described in the Upanishads and Brahma Sutra. So, in other words, Vyasadeva is beyond any material defects. So whatever he gives is then is transcendental. The absolute truth is described in the Upanishads and Brahma Sutra. But one must understand the verses as they are, right? In other words, the direct meanings that they give, that's what you have to take. So the difficulty is like it says, they cover them with the clouds of illusion because they don't take the direct meaning, they take some other meaning. You know, it's like if I say, could I please have a glass of water? And so instead of taking it directly, some they're saying, well, you know, then, you know, what does please mean? And then, you know, may I, who is this I, who is asking and like that, and may, you know, so like that, does that mean, you know, in the month of May, he, you know, we're talking about, or does that mean, you know, may means, excuse me, does he have the capability of doing this, or may is that he has the capacity, he's asking permission to do like that, and then at the same time is, you know, is that at present, or is that in the month of May, you know, like this, but then, you know, why would he ask now, you know, and this, but at the same time is then the glass, what does the glass mean? Is that means it's holding something? So there's the substance and all that, you know, what's the glass? What's the water? You know, the water represents this and the glass represents that. And this is what they do. And so no one ends up with a glass of water. Everyone dehydrates and that's it. You know, so that's the whole point is that's what they do. They just cover everything with illusion. And nothing can be understood. Well, it's very obvious. The guy wants a glass of water. No, no, no. How can you say that? You know, what about this? This means this, that means that. You know, like that. The absolute truth. Okay. Okay. But one must understand the verses as they are. That is the supreme glory in understanding. That's what's the glory in understanding, not that you technically can juggle the words. Sripad Shankaracharya described all the Vedic literatures in terms of indirect meanings. Gauna vritye. One who hears such explanations is ruined. Shankaracharya is not at fault, for it is under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he has covered the real purpose of the Vedas. Right? Because the Lord had him cover the purpose of the Vedas to bring the Buddhists back into the following the Veda, right? Following the Vedic culture. So we can see is that, you know, in the Lord's plan, you know, you take over, you know, so much time, hundreds of years, thousands of years, then people become Buddhists and they give up all they become nonviolent. Then after that, then they need to come back into the proper understanding. So the first thing is you introduce the culture, and then after that, the philosophy, like this, gradually you bring them in. So that's the slow path. According to direct understanding, mukyo arte, right? So he would do the gona. So gona means the secondary. Mukya means the primary. The absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has all spiritual opulences. No one can be equal to or greater than him. Everything about the Supreme Personality of Godhead is spiritual, including his body, opulence, and paraphernalia. Mayavada philosophy, however, covering his spiritual opulence, advocates the theory of impersonalism. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full of spiritual potencies. Therefore, his body, name, fame, and entourage are all spiritual, right? Because that's what we were studying, remember, in Bhagavad Sandarbha. So when you're establishing the absolute position of the Lord, then you establish him as transcendental, but also his name, form, qualities, pastimes, you know, entourage, everything's spiritual. Because otherwise, what's the meaning of Bhagavan if everything else is not spiritual? How do you distinguish Bhagavan? Because, you know, so one has to accept this if you're going to go beyond the impersonal understanding. Mayavada philosophy, however, covering his spiritual opulence, abrogates the theory of impersonalism. So that's the thing, they cover all these things. They try to say, oh, it means this, it means that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is full of spiritual potencies. Okay, therefore his body, name, fame, and entourage are all spiritual. The Mayavada philosopher, due to ignorance, says that these are all merely transformations of the material mode of goodness. right? So that's their problem, is even their understanding of the Brahman and their sense of liberation is just a transformation of the mode of goodness. So they never get the pure goodness. It's just a transformation of the mode of goodness. They may drop out elements of passion and ignorance, but their position of pure goodness, so there's Vasudev Sattva, is still just a transformation of material goodness. It's not actually transcendental goodness. So because they're burdened with the weight of the Avidya Shakti, that they don't understand the Supreme Lord. So they can't actually be in the real position of Shuddha Sattva. So that's why you see is this Shuddha Sattva that the devotees are in is actually a different position than the Shuddha Sattva of the that the impersonalists are in. So even though you can say is they're both, okay, transcendental to the material world in the way of, yes, the forms and karmas and the results that are there, yes, they're both transcendental to that, but the devotee is actually transcendental because they're absorbed in the Lord and his transcendental abode. While the impersonalists, they are only understanding some portion of the Brahman. And so they're not actually, this is not the pure goodness of Vasudev Sattva that is transcendental and will take you to the transcendental realm. This is a transformation of the mode of goodness that will bring them to the primary aspects of the primary creation, and then they'll be absorbed in that position. They'll go back from the aspects of the ingredients of karma and their combination and the results you're getting, but they don't actually come to the transcendental platform that the devotees are on. That's why we say is that the impersonalists are liberated, but the devotees come to that position. They're called the Brahma-Bhuta. So it's different. Liberation and Brahma-Bhuta are actually different, because in one, you're still under the Avidya-Shakti, and the other, you're beyond the Avidya-Shakti. You've come to the Vidya-Shakti. So now you have an understanding about the Lord. But now, you have to come to the platform of prema. Because understanding is one thing, and then developing love is another thing, right? So that's the... Does that make sense? So that's a fine point. It's there.
That's fine.
So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that these impersonalists, and he's quoting from Lord Chaitanya, that it's they're less intelligent, meaning that they're working under the Avidya Shakti, and so it's only a transformation of the mode of goodness. So it may be, you know, as far as material qualities go, it may be a very excellent position, but they're still within the material purview. Shankaracharya, who is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, says the Mayavadi philosopher, due to ignorance, right? So how can they be on Shuddha Sattva? Say that these are all merely transformations of the material mode of goodness. And unfortunately, because they say this and don't accept the Lord, they don't actually come to the real Vishuddha Sattva. We may say that they're on that platform because they may be acting without that real passion and ignorance, meaning of the gross and karma, but they're still burdened with, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So they're still under the Avidya Shakti. So it's not actually pure goodness. Right? It's a form of goodness just for the impersonalists. Shankaracharya, who is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, is faultless because he is a servant carrying out the orders of the Lord. But those who follow his Mayavad philosophy are doomed. They will lose all their advancement in spiritual knowledge. One who considers it, because we see is that they'll go up to this point and at some point they come down from there and just get into philanthropy and stuff like that, which is even below the level of karma. So they drop below, going from karma, you know, they give up vikarma, you know, and come to the level of karma. Then they give that up to come to the level of renunciation and go for liberation. But because it's dry, they'll fall down to just doing nice things. Like that, just being nice, being good, that's all. Feeding people, stuff like that. One who considers the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu to be made of material nature is the greatest offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. There's no greater blasphemer against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is like a great blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. The living entities are energies, not the energetic. The energetic is Krishna. This is very vividly described in the Bhagavad Gita, the Vishnu Puran, and other Vedic literatures. Besides these inferior energies, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Bhagavad Gita 7.5. So, in other words, we're a potency exploiting another potency. That's all. The potency of Lord Vishnu is summarized in three categories, namely the spiritual potency, the living entities, and ignorance. Right? So, yes. The spiritual potency is full of knowledge. The living entities, although belonging to the spiritual potency, are subject to bewilderment. And the third energy, which is full of ignorance, is always visible in fruitive activities. Vishnu Purana 6.7.61. The Mayavad philosophy is so degraded that it has taken the insignificant living entities to be the Lord, the Supreme Truth, right? The Lord can't be the Lord, but I can be the Lord. So that's the whole point, is that's why it's so offensive, is that the Lord doesn't have a form and I'm the Lord. We're sparks from the fire, but we're not the fire. You know, we're non-different from the fire, but we're not the source of it. We're coming from the fire. We don't, you know. Yeah. The spiritual potency full of knowledge, the living entities, although belong to the spiritual potency, are subject to bewilderment. And the third energy, which is full of ignorance, is always visible in fruitive activities. Vishnu Purana 6.7.61. The Mayavad philosophy is so degraded that it has taken the insignificant living entities to be the Lord, the Supreme Truth, thus covering the glory and supremacy that everything is but a transformation of the energy of the Lord. Right? So,
Maharaj, we missed one line in the... We missed the line
in the... But it did make sense. At least that it made sense. Sometimes you do that, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. The Mayavad philosophy is so degraded that it has taken the insignificant living entities to be the Lord, the Supreme Truth, thus covering the glory and supremacy of the Absolute Truth with monism. In his Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadeva has described that everything is but a transformation of the energy of the Lord. Shankaracharya, however, has misled the world by commenting that Vyasadeva was mistaken. So that's the thing, is that it says it here, and instead of explaining how, what it means, he's saying, no, he's made a mistake. And so because of that, if he's made a mistake, then how many other things could be a mistake? So then why are you even reading? So the point comes down, as we saw before, is if Vyasadeva has made a mistake, why are we even listening to him? Because that was the whole point in the beginning, that Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, then has no material defects of making mistakes, illusions, cheating, and sensory inefficiency. So these don't exist. So if that's been established, then that means Vedanta Sutra is perfect as it is. The Shankaracharya then says these things, and no one says, okay, then why are we listening to Vyasadeva? They just accept. So that's the fun part, how the Lord, puts everyone in illusion. You know, how Shankaracharya, you know, bewildered them, that he's throwing out, in one sense, the authority of Vedanta, of Vyasadeva. But the whole point is we're studying Vedanta. He gets his people to study Vedanta Sutra. But why would they study something from somebody who makes mistakes? You know? So it's you can see is just how much he's just putting all these people into illusion, that they just not catching what they're doing. You know, why not go read something else where there is no illusion? You know, Yeah, because he doesn't say Bhagavad Gita is wrong, but you know, like that. Thus, he has raised great opposition to theism throughout the entire world. Yeah, and you see, it's wherever you go to any university in that around the world, and they have a department on philosophy or, you know, studying all these different things. They'll always take Shankara's commentary. That's always the basis of the Indian philosophy, always. So that's the thing. He has opposed theism throughout the entire world. Why? Because it's the only thing they can relate to. Why? Because it's just speculation. They're academics, they speculate. Shankaracharya speculated, hey, you know, speculator, speculator, buddy, buddy, you know, it works, yeah. According to Shankaracharya, by accepting the theory of the transformation of the energy of the Lord, one creates an illusion by indirectly accepting that the absolute truth is transformed, right? So he's going to bring in this aspect about being transformed. Though their thing is, but if you say everything's come from the Lord, they'll say no. Then Brahman has been covered in. So they make it even worse. If you're saying that, okay, his energy is transformed, then and he's non-different, then you're indirectly saying he transforms. So what's the solution? He transforms. Brahma Parinamavad instead of Shakti Parinamavad. So this is how Shankaracharya so expertly bewildered these so-called, you know, intelligent people by just doing stuff that made no sense, but they buy it. So that's the thing, is if it made sense, then how are you going to remove it? But the point is because of illusion and Maya gives them faith, and so they're completely bewildered. But if they come in contact with the bona fide philosophy, they just give it up because it's wrong, right? So it's not that, oh, it's right, but now Vaishnavism has a different angle. No, just what Shankaracharya gave is just completely wrong.
Maharaj, also like we see as their proponents over a period of time, each one contradicts the other. Like the Brahma Parinamavad, they right now it's not accepted among the Shankarites. They came up with all the other ones. Because the Vaishnavas, they proved it wrong, then they have to come up with something new. So the old one, they don't even accept, and they don't even say that Shankaracharya actually promoted Brahma Parinamavad. They contributed to his disciples, and that they are mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah, so then what's to say that they're not bogus? So that's the whole point, is they just, it just keeps them busy. It's just Maya keeps them busy. You know, it's like giving a cat, you know, a ball of twine, you know, all it does is just bat it around and go and roll around and pick it up. And that's all, but it's doing nothing, but it keeps it real busy. You know? Okay. Transformation of energy is a proven fact. It is the false bodily concept of the self that is an illusion, right? So in other words, the energy transforms. It's our accepting that transformation as us. That's the illusion. Not that the transformation doesn't take place. So they're saying, I'm not the body. There is no transformation. There's nothing. And so it's just all, you know, nothingness. So that's why we see is that they're actually Buddhists, you know, but they're using the Vedic scriptures, following the Vedic culture, but actually they're Buddhists. It's not actually a proper philosophy. And they put their grounding in Vedanta Sutra, but they have to completely cover it to make it work for their philosophy. Right? Okay. Yes. So we'll stop here for today. Like that. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.